Hey, welcome into the Gas House Gang here on KMOX. Obviously, well, it's all over the place. I should say KMOX, but also on the KMOX YouTube page, Facebook page, Twitter handle. Well, we're obviously doing this as we have been it's been several months now that we've been doing this. It's building and going faster. It's brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling right there and over there. And then Game Day Men's Health right over there. I'm trying to figure this stuff out. This mirrored camera stuff is still killing me. Even after all these, we're on show like 86 and it's still screwing me up because I'm an idiot. Welcome in, guys. Obviously, Bernie and I are here as planned. Matt Pauly joining us before he jumps on a plane to come back. And we're going to do a lot of baseball. We'll hit some Blues at the end with the news on the Colton Parayko injury. It's definitely worth talking about that here on deadline day in the NHL. But mostly baseball to start. And I think maybe, Bern, the best way to go with this to start is to give our man Matt Pauly, who's about to leave Jupiter, just take the floor for a minute, Matt, and talk about what you think is the most significant of what you've seen since you've been there. Because you've been down there for 3.5, going on 4 weeks. You've spent a lot of time at the ballpark and at the practice field. What stands out?
Yeah, I think the fact that it's been kind of a boring spring training, honestly, and that's not a bad thing. Anytime I say, boring has a negative connotation, it's not that way. And I've mentioned this a couple times, but just the workmanlike nature of this one, where you had so many young guys who were showing up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning and getting out on the backfields and doing extra work and then coming in and having breakfast and getting out for standard workouts. Look, maybe if I transported myself in time and went back to last year's spring training, 2 years ago spring training, I would have felt the same way about it. I can be a prisoner of the moment just like anybody. But man, it really feels like this is a hungry group. Now, does that play out over 162 games? Does that help the team win games? We'll see. You know, talent at the end of the day generally wins out. And I think there's still a question of the Cardinals' talent versus other teams' talent. But I've just been impressed by a lot of these younger players who were promised runway, and some of them are going to get it and some of them are not. But so many of these younger players, the effort that they have clearly and obviously put out during this game. And I think we see it. You know, Victor Scott II has looked really good in the outfield. Obviously, his hitting is looking great, but he works with John Jay every single morning. And I haven't seen the man take a bad route in the outfield. That's a credit to the work that he's put in.
I had to flash the U for John.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know what the heck you were doing there. I thought you were Spielberg framing a shot.
Framing my face.
Yeah, we're gonna play paper football right here over.
That's another possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Matt, I wanted to ask you this, not to put you on the spot, only from the standpoint of, you know, sometimes when you get a spontaneous question, you know, I know my brain works. It's like, oh, I forgot that guy. Darn it. So I don't want to do that, but take your time. But if you had to, you don't have to limit it to just one. If you had to say, you can go with as many as three. Okay. What three position players have impressed you the most so far? And what three pitchers have impressed you the most so far?
So when you say impressed, I must say that means they are doing more than we expect them to do. You know, Wilson Contreras hasn't impressed me because he's doing what he's supposed to do. Although it's his first base stuff, notwithstanding. But, you get the point that I'm trying to make.
Sure.
I think I would go Lucan Baker, Jose Barrero, Victor Scott II. That would be my position player group. From a pitching standpoint, I would go this. Both these guys struggled a little bit yesterday, but at least prior to yesterday, it was clearly and easily Tecoa Roby and Gordon Graceffo. I'll throw Rodery Munoz in there as well. Yeah. Those would be the three guys. With a honorable mention to Kyle Leahy's last appearance, he was nasty. He looked better than we've ever seen him look before. So I don't know if that was a single game sort of thing, but he was really good. So those are the names that jump out at me. Obviously, the guys who are doing what they're supposed to do, the Nootbaars, the Arenados, the Contreras's, we know about them. So that's the group of names that maybe aren't at the top of people's minds that jumped out at me at this camp.
It's fascinating. And by the way, I think that it's a good thing that the first half of a spring training camp is somewhat boring. You know, mm-hmm. I covered a lot of those. Bernie, you've been down there a lot. Usually when there's a lot of buzz and a lot of news in the first half, it's not good news. It's unless it's a contract extension, right? Because the Cardinals did that for a long time. They'd have their annual Yadier Molina contract or Adam Wainwright or whatever. But typically it means a lot of injuries. And the Cardinals so far have avoided the big ones to the big guys, right? I mean, Zach Thompson's going to miss some time. The Walker thing seems minor, though. And again, so far, fingers crossed, there's still a lot of time left for something to happen. But look at like where the Yankees are, where they've lost Stanton for the time being and Luis Gil for the next 3 or 4 months. And DJ LeMahieu is down. There are teams that are, you know, really shorthanded already. And I think quiet is probably good because I don't know what would constitute a good noisy in the first 3 weeks because it's just the first week, 3 weeks. If we're getting crazy about the first 9 or 10, 11 games in Grapefruit League action, that's on us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I liked your picks, Matt. Not that you need my approval. And I also think to add to it, because again, I said three, you know, so we can build on that a little bit. But certainly, you know, McGreevy is looking really good and has not done a darn thing to alter the perception that he's ready to be a starter in the major leagues. And yeah, I mean, there's no need to go over, you know, 1,000 names. I think that's good the way we did it. I would throw McGreevy in there too. And I'm sure there's some other people we could talk about. We will talk about because there's still a long way to go in spring training, you know, so that's the thing. But it is interesting. And some of the questions on all of our minds, I'm talking about fans, people watching us, the three of us. It is interesting, and we don't have to get into this deeply right now because there's going to be plenty of time, but I'm just kind of putting it out there. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do with some of these roster spots. It's going to be really interesting to see if the center field battle really does come down to Victor Scott and Michael Ciani, you know, whether the Cardinals are rethinking this idea of, you know, playing Newt Barr a lot in center, you know. Nothing has to be decided today, but that's going to be a really interesting situation to monitor. The three bullpen jobs or so that are open, that's going to be really interesting to monitor. The fifth starting rotation job, frankly, won't be that interesting to manager because the won't be that interesting to monitor. Pardon me, because the Cardinals, you know, pretty much have four of the things set in stone and. You know, I guess the one thing that surprised me, and, you know, Katie Wu had a thing today where she was doing her updated roster projection, and she framed it, and I think she's well informed. She framed the fifth spot as a battle between McGreevy and Pallante. And I'm thinking, how does Pallante not have a sure thing job?
Should be a lock, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there as some things I would advise – fans who are watching us, and thank you for watching us. You know, the things to really keep an eye on, those are some of the things.
It's the Gas House Gang on a Friday. Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler, Matt Pauly, one more time from Jupiter, Florida. Obviously brought to you by Game Day Men's Health and Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, tell us a bit about Saliga before we start talking about projections and who can exceed them and who may not.
All righty. Thank you. Saliga Heating and Cooling is an independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer. It's been serving St. Louis family since 1927. And man, do I love that. I mean, that was the year of the 1927 Yankees with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Waite Hoyt and all of those dudes, right? But really, this all that tells you is how great they are, because you better be great. If you're going to be, you started on in 1927 and you're not only still in business, your business is growing and growing and growing. And, you know, just continues to set the trend here in St. Louis for excellence in heating and cooling. So you don't last from 1927 through now we're into 2025, unless you are great at what you do, unless you are trustworthy, unless you are extremely knowledgeable and professional. So, that's always going to be my thing with Saliga Heating and Cooling. And we know, because we've been a Saliga family for 16 years. Before I wrap this one up, just take a look at the Priority Club. Go to, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Take a look at the Priority Club. It's a maintenance program that will do right by you. It will really help you. So you go to the site and check out all the information on the Priority Club, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Thank you.
All right, so yesterday on the show, Matt, Bernie and I were talking about where there's upside in the lineup. And, you know, we'll just go around the positions, I think, pretty quickly, because I think some of them are going to be easy conversations. We don't need to spend a lot of time, for example, talking about Wilson Contreras. I think we know what his ability and upside is. It's what he's shown as a Cardinal when he's been on the field. I would caution everybody, and I like to throw this out there, to not get too caught up in whatever projections you see out there, because no matter how good projections are, they're based on the past, because you can't put data in from the future because the future doesn't exist yet. And like, as an example, I love Dan Szymborski. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And his Zips projections are really good. They're very solid. As long as you understand what projections are, which is essentially a slight review of the past with some tweaks for aging and things along those lines. I mean, like the Zips have Wilson Contreras getting 400 plate appearances this year. I mean, the only time that's happening is if he breaks his arm getting hit with a bat. He's gonna get a lot more than that, barring an injury. So it's just to point out the context, because they're not bad in and of themselves. You just have to understand context when you're looking at projections. And as we go around, guys, we don't have to focus on projections specifically. But upside to me is anywhere there's a chance that we're going to get more than we've gotten in the past, right? So if we look at the catcher position, it's different in that it's two different guys. They're both here last year, and Contreras was obviously in that spot before. I think there's a lot of upside in Herrera's bat, but I'm curious what you guys think about what we're seeing from Pages in spring as far as how often he's hitting the ball hard. I mean, as of a couple of days ago, he had put 8 balls in play, and they were averaging like 95, 96 miles an hour off the bat. So what if he's decent offensively? Not good, but let's say he's decent. And combine that with Herrera, who's a chance to be a really good hitter. I think there's a lot of upside offensively there, and the question might come down to which guy plays enough good defense to play the most.
Yeah, I like the numbers that you had ran that you just alluded to, Pages' hard hit rate. That's notable. That's something that we need to look at, because that can also change the alignment of this team with how often Herrera is going to be able to DH if Pages is starting. So I definitely think there's a chance to move forward offensively. They didn't get a lot from Wilson Contreras last year because he wasn't in the lineup enough, and Herrera was good when he was in there, but Pages played most of the time. So the catcher's position is ripe for there to be a step forward offensively.
I think Herrera – listen, I pay more attention to Herrera because hitting – as you guys know, Wheels, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, mm-hmm. hard hit rate matters, so I'm not in any way disagreeing with you. But if you look at Herrera, he also is a patient hitter who draws walks.
Yep.
So he will give you on-base percentage. He has hit for a high average already, although I must say, in fairness, it was inflated by a pretty high number, a pretty big batting average on balls in play. Mm-hmm. So that might have been a little misleading, as I think he had 307. But he'll draw walk, he'll get on base. And I think, you know, in the long run, you know, he definitely has more power potential to
without question
than Pages. So again, it's a redundant thing, but I don't know how to avoid saying it again. If it's a runway season, you know, I'm thinking Herrera should get more playing time than Pages. And by the way, I don't believe that the DH spot will be as open as we think.
No, I'm with you.
Because if Gorman's going to spend a lot of time at DH, right, against right-handed pitchers, which I think he will, and Luke and Baker's going to make the club, which I know Matt Pauly thinks, and I agree. Well, where's that put Herrera in terms of DHing? So
none,
My point is, like, I do respect Pages a lot. Don't get me wrong. But it's not like you can move Herrera around to other places to get at bats. So he's going to have to catch a lot. And, you know, and the manager is maybe going to have to resist the veterans who are going up to him and say, well, you know, and we, you know, we really like throwing a Pages. So the man, you know, it'll be curious to see, because this will indicate to me his decision, whether how much sway the pitchers continue to have over every St. Louis manager that I've seen since Tony La Russa left. It's an amazing thing. It really is. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, a quick sidetrack. I wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that those are guys, all three of them, that didn't have a lot of managerial experience. And I know Schilte did in the minors, so that's not really fair. And I know Ollie did the minors too, but that's not with guys that are damn near your age. It's not the
same
thing.
They're not trying to win games in the minors.
That's right.
To develop players.
That's right. And get the respect of major league players. And I know that's a challenge. So it'll be fascinating. I think that's a really interesting thing. And I think, you know, we've talked about it a lot. The decisions there should probably also be based on need at a moment, right? Like, when you're not hitting, get the bat in there. When you're not hitting, when your team's not hitting, get Herrera in there. Make sure he's in there. If you got other guys hot and you're crushing it and you want to play a little defense, okay, that's fine. But that's kind of where my overall theme keeps coming back to. Be adaptable. Adapt to the circumstances day by day, week by week, and don't just say, this is what we're doing, and try to force the square peg into the round hole. That would be the wisest way to maximize that position. And I think second base, center field, you know, all of those things are kind of the same conversation as we go. Do you guys have any thoughts on Wilson? I mean, to me, he's a sure thing. And all we have to do to see what his real upside is see what he looks like with like 550 plate appearances, which you're not going to get as a catcher.
My thought's pretty simple, and I've run these numbers a bunch of times. Based on the number of plate appearances he had the last two seasons combined, and I forget what that is. Maybe I think I set the parameters at 800 plate appearances. He's on the short list of the top right-handed hitters in baseball. There's really nothing to add because he takes walks, he hits for power. If anything, I think, well, obviously he'll hit more home runs because he's going to have more at bats and to do so. So
right.
He's an established, very good major league hitter.
Yeah, he's been 30% above major league average since becoming a Cardinal as a hitter. That's an all-star.
Right.
That's an all-star bat. Forget position. That's an all-star bat. Right, Matt?
Yeah, and by the way, he looks pretty good over first base. That's been good. I was expecting it to look kind of clunky.
Yeah.
It hasn't. He came in on a play the other day where he threw home. He started a funky like 3-6-1 type double play the other day. Like maybe I got that a little bit, but that style of double play, like he looks fine. Now, at some point in time, he's not going to look fine. I get that, but Paul Goldschmidt didn't make 100% of the plays. I'm not saying he's Goldschmidt. I'm just saying this is a guy who looks very comfortable over first.
You know, Wheels, let me ask you this. And we're probably getting off topic because we were going to go through all these guys.
It's all right. We got time.
But I want to ask you this, and you'll love it because you were a catcher. One of the thoughts that I had about Contreras moving to first, and I didn't think it was all that big of a deal, other than the fact that Goldie was a well-established, very good defensive first baseman,
right?
Is that when you're at a catcher, what are you doing, right? You're reading everything. You're reacting quickly. Things are coming at you. Oh, you got a decision to make. Oh, now I got to get up and throw. It's all about quick reflexes, quick reaction time.
Yep.
So if you're playing first base and the ball's coming at you, well, he's kind of used to balls coming at him. I mean, like, you know what I mean? It's not like this is taking him out of his element. Like a lot of the catcher skills are applicable to playing one of the corner positions in that you got to be a quick thinker. And you got to have really quick reflexes.
Yeah, and lower body flexibility is another big one for catchers, mm-hmm. and that really works at first because when you talk about getting down for the ball in the dirt, getting down there is using your legs. So he's already adapted that. And by the way, you know, you're used to things coming at you from 60 feet, 6 inches. Mm-hmm. You're used to having about 0.3 seconds to react to a pitch when you see it out of the hand. That's how long you have to figure out whether you're going to catch it or block it, whether you're going to catch and throw or just catch and frame. And at first base, nothing's happening in 0.3 seconds. barring like a line drive right at you off the bat. But again, you're going to be 110 feet away. You're going to be 120 feet away. Reaction time. I got a feeling for a guy like that, everything will seem slower just because he's used to everything being fast. Yeah.
He had one the other day. He was playing pretty much even with the bag and ground ball, like two or three hopper came off the bat at 105, 106. Handled it like it was nothing.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. It may be the little things like footwork around the bag, tag plays when a throw pulls him off the bag. Like those are the things that you're going to more likely notice the difference. The normal stuff, scoop and throws, catching ground balls, he's going to be fine. He'll be totally fine with all of that. That's a good point, Byrne. Thanks for bringing that up. All right, rest of the infield. Upside versus expectation, right? I think Brendan Donovan. I think we know what he is. There's, you know, he can play. We know we talked about it yesterday, Bernie, and I wonder if you agree, Matt. Like, he doesn't have the big ceiling and he doesn't have a low floor. He's going to be somewhere in this. He's going to be on base and he's going to hit a little bit of home run, you know, hit some home runs here and there, but not a ton. And maybe those impact each other. But I think we know what he is. I think we have a pretty good idea of what Arenado is. And I think a little better than last year. Like, there's upside there just by not being the worst you've been in your career, right? I mean, he's got a long career of being better than that, and we're seeing the bat speed. So with those two guys, do you see big ceilings, moderate ceilings. Do you see any possibility that things could go south for Arenado, or that they might go south for Donovan?
Good, man.
Arenado, maybe, if he looks like he looked last year, if his back starts to act up on him, if he slows down, if age catches up with him, if what he looks like in spring is not really who he is. I don't think there's any downside with Donovan, but we always have to look. Arenado's an older guy who has dealt with back problems in his career, so you always have to leave open the possibility that those impact him again.
And I think, you know, and I keep talking about this, and I'm still going to mention it again, because the idea that there's not some power left in that bat, I think, is premature, because last year was a really tough year. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a Pollyanna with this stuff, but I'll remind everyone, like, the not only last year, but 2023, when his decline phase started to really kick in, you know, the dude slugged very well at Busch Stadium. Like, last year, he had a 433 slugging percentage at Busch Stadium. The year before that, he had a slightly higher slugging percentage in 433 at Busch Stadium. That's not an easy yard for hitters. And my point being is, anybody that can slug 433 at Busch Stadium, let's say 440 over a 2-year period, there's some juice left in the bat. For whatever reason, he did not hit for as much power on the road. So it's kind of a little bit of a confusing profile. But I'm just saying, I absolutely refuse to write off the possibility that he'll have a bounce back year. Now, when I say bounce back year, okay, I'm not talking about, I'm not saying it's going to be 2022 or anything close, but it'll be better than last year with some more power. And so everyone will laugh at me, not you guys, but that's fine. I do the research in order to come up with these kind of opinions, right?
Right. That's the way you do it.
As far as Donovan, the way I would describe it quickly, in his career, which began 2022 in the majors, all right, we've seen him attain a really high on-base percentage. And then later on, we saw him hit for more power. But when he hit for more power, he kind of sacrificed on base percentage and working counts and all that. I think he's still trying to find that happy medium where you get it just right, that combination of OBP and power. And he's a really, really, really smart guy. So I think he'll do it. So, no, Donovan's about as reliable as anybody on the
team. I agree. All right, it's the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler. Matt's going to hang with us for one more segment and then get ready to pack things up and head on back to the St. Louis region from being down in South Florida.
One quick question to throw in here, because we're talking infield. Do you guys have any concerns at all about Mason Wynn? Now, listen.
I do.
I was going to say, and Wheels, you and I are on the same page about some things that were problematic for him last year, even though he had a heck of a rookie season. Don't get me wrong. And Wheels, I know that you said, you know, don't pay attention to projections, but I always look at him, and I thought it was interesting to see Dan Zaborski and Zips. You know, they have him hitting 253 with a 307 on base, 392 slug. But if you go by OPS plus, they got him about 6% above average.
Below average.
Yeah, I meant to say below. Yeah.
Yeah.
I misspoke. That would be a step back from last year. And I don't think it's unreasonable, because we saw Walker have a really good rookie year, and then pitchers figured him out.
Yep.
They found some things they could hit him. They could pound that low and away pitch to him. Gorman, pitchers caught on to him really quick after some initial success. And so that's the challenge here. I mean, pitchers always find your holes. Pitching coach has got all off season to research that stuff.
Yeah.
So you and I, Wheels, have talked about this a lot, and just throw it out there again. I wonder how good he could be if he just kept his bat, his swing path in the strike zone. He chases way too much. And the pitchers will feast on this. It's a guy that, despite, again, his success, and let me say it again so everyone knows, I love Mason Wynn.
I do too.
But he's a guy that pitchers will say, well, wait a minute, this guy.
I don't have to throw him a strike. Yep.
Yeah, he'll get himself out.
Yeah, I think
And if he doesn't change that, that's going to be a problem. Sorry,
but yeah. You nailed it, Bernie. It's funny because in my head, I had grouped those three guys, Walker, Gorman, and Wynn, together for us to discuss all at once. Because I think their upside for all three is entirely based on that one thing. Who stops swinging at pitches off the plate? Because if Walker stops doing that, he's going to hit 25 home runs, and he's going to probably hit for a decent average as hard as he hits the ball. If Gorman stops doing it, he's going to hit 30 home runs. And if Wynn stops doing it, he'll hit for more power, and then the speed will play even more. I think the same thing is the cause of concern and the potential for the upside for all three of those guys.
He's aware of it. You know, the other day he drew a walk and he gave a fist pound and looked over to the guy. He was fired up about drawing a walk. So that's a good sign that he is keenly aware of the fact that he's got to stop swinging at some stuff outside the zone. And also swinging at stuff that he can't drive. It's not just outside the zone.
Oh, it's on bad parts of the zone,
yeah,
too.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to work a stat up on this. We can come back to it. But, you know, another guy I would put in there, and I know we're talking about infielders, right?
Oh, no, we're going all over. You go where you want.
Okay. I love Alec Burleson. You know, and it's interesting because he figures to lose some at-bats, maybe a lot of at-bats.
Especially if Victor Scott wins center field.
Right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, if Newt Barr's in left, he absolutely will lose a lot of at-bats. I mean, because the math doesn't add up with Donovan playing more second base.
Yeah.
And then moving around. Okay. I think this stat is very telling about Burleson. We all know he's a great contact hitter. He gets the ball on the bat. The problem is he chases too much junk. Check this out.
That's right.
Last season, in terms of like swinging at strikes or swinging at balls out of the strike zone, okay, he swung at non-strikes about 51% of the time, okay? That's a lot.
Woo.
He hit 184 and had a 209 slug, and he had one home run when he chased pitches out of the zone and made contact. When he stayed inside the strike zone, this is StatCast stuff, by the way, 49% of the time. So he swung at more non-strikes than strikes. But when he swung and connected with strikes, 302 average, 505 slug, and 20 of his 21 home runs. Now, I mean, you don't have to be Charlie Lau. Look him up, kids, if you don't know who I'm talking about. You don't have to be Charlie Lau to figure out for Burleson, a guy like him, to realize his full hitting potential. It's actually a simple thing. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but it's a simple thing. Quit chasing stuff off the plate. Stay in the strike zone, and you're a fabulous major league hitter, right?
And honestly, For the big picture for the team, that trait is probably the do or die for this offense.
Yep, I totally agree, my friend. Yep,
and that's
totally
you know, so hopefully, you know, a focus on it and an understanding of it. Because I heard Burleson last year mention he knew it and he knew that it wasn't helpful. Obviously, Matt, you just noted that Mason Wynn is conscious of it, but there's a difference between being conscious of it and doing it. Because I think if two of those guys get notably better than that, that boosts this offense more than we could even measure. Because they have everything else. They all hit it hard. Mason Wynn's a five-tool player. Like, these guys can play, but you cannot do damage when you're swinging at pitchers' pitches all the time. You just can't. Nobody can. Ted Williams, number one rule of hitting is get a good pitch to hit. You think Ted knew a little something or something?
Yeah, I would think so. Right.
All right.
By the way, real quick, you know, since I promised this, and I know that I'm sort of slowing down the works here. Last season, when Mason Wynn connected with strikes, pitches in the zone, a 295 average, 469 slug, Ooh. And he had 12 homers. When he swung at non-strikes, which was 48.5% of the times, he hit 206, had a 294 slug, and hit Boom. Three home runs. I mean,
boom.
And he's chasing a lot, even in spring training. I know it doesn't matter, but it kind of matters because it's something to monitor.
Anyway. That's the kind of thing that does matter. Your batting average doesn't mean a damn thing in spring training, but repeating bad habits matters. Yeah. Or repeating good habits. Repeating good habits matters too, which is why we're excited about Victor Scott. And then we'll close this part on this because I know, Matt, you got to run here in a second.
Thanks, Matt.
This can be quick because I think there's just a couple more guys. And I don't want to talk about offensive upside with Ciani, not to be a jerk. I just don't think there is any. But with Newt Barr, who I guess I think we would agree, right? He's got to stay on the field for us to see maybe a 20-25 homer guy. And then Victor Scott is the other one. Like if any of this is close to real, even if it's not fully real, not the batting average, but the batted ball numbers we're seeing from Vic in spring training, that gives you a chance to do the thing that we've been hearing about, Matt, that you talked about from the beginning of spring. Ollie wants to run. Well, put Vic in.
Yeah. His numbers this spring are so encouraging because the actual numbers and then the underlying numbers that all of us talk about so often, they're all really good. And, yeah. He's going to start facing better pitching as spring goes along because guys get sent to minor league camp and starters go deeper into games. So we'll start to see more and more on how real this is. But this is the game changer for this team. If this is who he is and you can just put him out in center field and get that kind of dynamic player in the lineup every single day, that can make this team do a lot of things pretty good.
Yeah, nothing else to say. I said a lot about Victor Scott. To me, he epitomizes what a runway season should be, you know. And if it comes down, if Newt Barr is going to play a lot in left field, which is I think what we all thought at the beginning. I think the Cardinals might be rethinking that. And if it's the Yanni Scott competition, I mean, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say because. After Scott made changes last season, he put a lot of work in. Ryan Ludwig gave him some stuff. He shifted his body weight. He sets up a little differently. The leg kick is sort of like triggered his power.
Yep.
And his last 20 games, I think, of last season, it's a small sample because it has to be because they didn't play him. Okay, so it's got to be a small play. You know, he was 30% above average offensively. Based on weighted runs created plus, he slugged .470 roughly, hit for average, had a high on base. That represented all the stuff he worked on, and then he's continued that in the spring training. And I trust my friend and colleague Matt Pauly. If Matt Pauly tells us he looks really good in center field because of the work with John Jay, what is there to decide? Unless he completely falls apart.
Exactly. Right. Just got to keep doing what you're doing then, right?
Yeah.
So. Makes sense. All right, guys. So, Matt, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Safe travels. We'll see you next week here in person. I'll give you a big old fist bump when you get back, man. But enjoy the family this weekend.
All right. Sounds great, guys.
There you go. Matt Bawley in one last time from Jupiter. And by the way, Tom Ackerman will be our closer. He'll be finishing things up down in Jupiter starting over the weekend, which means, by the way, I'll be in for him on sports on a Sunday morning, Bern. So we'll get to talk again.
Oh, good.
On Sunday morning as well. All right. Final segment we get to. It's the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler with you here. It's brought to you by Game Day Men's Health. Go to GameDayMen'sHealth.com. And it's brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Saliga has been taking care of us about 16 years, as I like to say. And we're members of the Priority Club, and Saliga Heating and Cooling is an independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. And the Priority Club, which we've talked about, is if you become a member, it's a maintenance plan. They come out twice a year before it gets hot, before it gets cold. Make sure your heating and air conditioning is working just fine. And the benefits of preventative maintenance are many. Everything's working. It means safety. Your safety. You're not worried about it. You get peace of mind. And when they do the maintenance, they just do the little adjustments that need to be made. If they see something, they'll adjust it. They'll tweak it. That can prevent a big expensive problem later. So it'll save you money. And your equipment with maintenance will last longer. So you won't have to be buying new stuff maybe as much as you have in the past. So to find out the benefits of preventative maintenance, go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com.
All right, so obviously starting next week, we'll be back more to full baseball, and you know, it depends. But, I mean, the Blues are in an interesting spot, Bernie. We talked about them yesterday with today being trade deadline day, and we both agreed, you know, you add if it makes sense and doesn't cost you anything for real, but you don't really want to subtract too big. Unfortunately, right after our show yesterday, we got the news that Colton Parayko had the scope on his knee, that he'll be reevaluated in 6 weeks, which means he's out at least 8 weeks, which means he's out for the regular season and maybe some of the playoffs if you were to even get in there. So does that change anything that we talked about for you? Because for me, it doesn't really, because I wouldn't have done a whole lot. I wouldn't do a whole lot differently today than I would before. Again, unless somebody just makes me a really good offer that I can't refuse that helps me in the long term.
No, I don't think it at all. I mean, the Blues have some depth at defense, and don't get me wrong, man. I'm not saying that Parayko, you know, somehow it's not that big of a deal because he got hurt. I mean, one of the reasons why their offense has been on the uptick, and really it's been on the uptick for quite a long time, is because their defensemen as a group are contributing a lot more to the offense this year. And if you look at Parayko, at the time he got hurt, he was fourth among defensemen in the NHL in goals with 15. And he also plays a tremendous he also spends a tremendous amount of time on the ice, you know, killing penalties, power play. I mean, he's been an iron horse for them, and he's playing the best hockey of his career. And so this is a really big blow because he has very much been a so-called glue guy for the Blues, but he's more than just a glue guy. Like, it's a guy like, well, you know, he'll eat a lot of minutes for you, and he's solid defensively. No, man. 15 goals from a
defenseman. Yeah.
So they don't have – there's no way to replace that. Doug Armstrong made a great trade when he got Cam Fowler, who has been outstanding. And I think this means more ice time for Nick Leddy, which ain't – doesn't, you know, I'm not going to go run around my room saying yes, but you know, I got to say, since he came back, Leddy, how do I put this? I don't want to give him a backhanded compliment. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Since he's returned, he hasn't stunk on ice. I mean, he's actually looked better. Right. So, but I don't see how it affects his view on Braden Schenn whatsoever. I just don't. I think he'll want to give this team a chance to prove. The players were saying it yesterday or the day before to the reporters covering the team, including Jeremy Rutherford. You know, no. We've had to overcome injuries before. Let's go. They're very determined to prove they can overcome anything. And so keep that attitude where it is. I just don't see the point in messing with anything too much. And, you know, and I can't explain this very well, Wheels, and I apologize, but also there's changes in the salary cap, and there's also going to be changes what the Blues can do to get more cap room with some of the injury stuff. So the concerns about Braden Schenn's salary, I get it. That salary, that average of $6.5 million next year and then the 2 years after that, it's going to be more comfortable in terms of salary cap. It's not going to be as big a deal as it was. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think my only worry is, you know, because he's a physical guy, does that lead to a decline in play in those years? And it's not just him. I mean, there are other bad contracts they're not bad players. They're just locking you up. This is kind of the thing. Like, I don't want to make it out like any of these guys under big contracts of Blues just suck. That's not the argument. The argument is just that you don't have room to get better. And hopefully with the new cap things you're talking about, Byrne, with the cap going up a little bit, you'll be able to create something. But it's so hard in this league. And if there was something here, forget Braden Schenn for a second. If there was something here where I could change up my core in some way, I'd really like to look at that. But that's not a deadline trade. That's an offseason trade, right? I mean, at the deadline, other teams are going to want to give you picks and prospects because they want to keep their team intact and then add to it. So it's not really the kind of thing we would look at on a day like today anyway. But there might be some value in looking at changing up like your core five or six guys in some way, shape, or form, because the year-to-year inconsistency has been crazy. Now, hopefully it settles in and it doesn't keep going this way with Montgomery, but we know Berube was a pretty good coach and it was that way with him too. So, you know, I don't know that there's an easy answer. And this, again, this is not a today topic. This is definitely more of a, would you look at that in the offseason? I don't know. Maybe we can down the road, Byrne. We don't have as much time now, but we can down the road talk a bit about too, how Alex Steen will eventually put his stamp on all this. I would imagine he's going to have more say next year than this year, just because he's been there longer and it's going to be a year before taking over. Will be interesting to see what his vision of all of this will be.
The Blues, I don't think they want to do anything to compromise their ability, their chances to get into postseason next year.
Right. I agree with that.
Because if they don't make it this year, it'll be three straight.
That's right.
And they hadn't been there since the dark days of Bill Lawrie selling the team and all that.
I would agree with that.
So they go into next season. It's almost kind of like a Doug Armstrong's last year as the GM, last season. It is a make the playoffs or bust type of year. They will go I don't know if it's all in, but they're not going to subtract from the nucleus guys that they think can help get them there.
Yeah, I don't mean subtract. I mean like swap.
No, I know
like,
what you meant. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, we're on the same page. I know exactly what you meant.
Yeah,
but I'm just kind of reinforcing the idea that
that's a really good point.
This isn't the type of team. It's like we'll be, you know, we'll get a prospect. No,
no,
they want to keep guys that they have and maybe add to it in free agency this summer because someone figured out the Blues will have around $12 million to work with. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So you know,
you probably don't need more than one real big player. You know.
So I think they'll be active on the free agent market, which is another reason not to make a trade now.
Good point. Really good point. All right. Well, we'll see what happens on the rest of deadline day. Probably not a ton from the Blues. And obviously, we got another weekend of baseball. We'll start breaking it down when we get back next weekend. Bernie, you have a good weekend. Okay, everybody buddy out there, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you. Have a great weekend. Thanks to Game Day Men's Health and Saliga for being sponsors of the Gas House Gang. We'll talk to you guys next week.